Ah, son of a bitch. Freaking.
What just
You know,
happened?
like that little beanie part top on your hat? I think it's like falling apart because I just put my headphones on top of it and it just dug into my skull.
Did you just suffer a podcasting injury, Jeff?
I think that this is the first in recorded history. I need I'm t I'm taking the day off. I'm done.
Literally recorded history. I have Zoom video of you injuring yourself podcasting.
Yeah, let's keep that under wraps.
No, this is going to be huge on TikTok. Old
Yeah, I bet.
man injures himself podcasting.
Story of my life.
Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers. I am failed Substack podcaster Eric Raskin. I am joined by so far not failed Substack writer Jeff Edelstein. When we're not pursuing our side hustles, we are writers, editors, and podcasters for Casino Reports, InGame, Lottery Geeks, and Props.com. Please give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app of choice. And also feel free to give Jeff $8 a month if you enjoy his non-gambling writing. I don't know what the star to dollar conversion rate is, but all told, 5 stars and $8 sounds pretty affordable.
Yeah.
Jeff, how are you on this fine Thursday morning? How's life in the gig economy?
Yeah, it's interesting. We off to a hot start. Real people really decide to support me right from the
Great.
jump,
Okay.
and it's slowing down a wee bit, but that's to be expected.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's a what's a geez, I should probably tell people the website if they want to check it out.
Yeah,
Jeff
may as well.
Edelstein at
I think, yeah, I think that's all it is.
substack.com
Jeff Edelstein dot
dot
Substack,
com, or is
whatever.
it at, let's see.
This
I
is
should
so
probably know
sad.
this. Oh, here it is. JeffEdelstein.substack.com. There we
Okay,
go.
there you go.
JeffEdelstein.substack.com. Got it. Yeah,
Right.
I should probably imprint that.
It's
Yeah,
pretty
no.
easy to remember. It's your name dot Substack.com.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard. It
Right.
is that hard. Yeah, so that's where I'm. That's all my non-gambling writing is going there. Yeah, if I could get like I don't know, I lower the yearly price down to $72. It's like $6 a month. I mean,
Oh,
for the
yeah.
price of a cup of coffee, you could either read my bullshit or like save a life in Central Africa
Or enjoy a cup of coffee.
or enjoy a cup of coffee and just like and not worry about any of it. But
Right.
your choice. I don't really care. Anyway, coming up, we have an interview with the wonderfully named Zach Zimbili, aka Zach the CPA. He's going to talk to us about gambling and taxes. Of course, that's like the biggest news going with this federal bill capping deductions at 90%, which is the most batshit crazy thing I've ever heard of in my life. But before we get to all that, first, Eric, as always, plenty o' news to discuss.
Yep, and our top story this week concerns a scandal that broke just a few hours after we recorded last week's pod. So it probably feels like old news, but as far as Low Rollers is concerned, it's not. Cleveland Guardians pitcher Luis Ortiz is being investigated by MLB for yet another gambling scandal. But what makes this one interesting is that it is reportedly over two pitches he threw, and it concerns micro betting, in-game betting on the outcome of an individual pitch. I'm sure you've seen the videos. One pitch was garden variety bad, the other was worse than that. They happened a couple of games apart, and IC360 flagged the betting and sent out alerts as something about the next pitch betting action on Ortiz to throw a ball or hit the batter struck them as unusual. As you know, if you read my article on InGame, Jeff, I started out feeling like micro betting just opens a whole can of worms and creates new integrity concerns. But Tomasz Deweniszek, the CEO of the micro betting tech company Curo, partially convinced me that actually micro betting integrity violations are easier to catch. So anyway, we've had a few days now to digest this. Where are you landing on this Ortiz scandal, Jeff?
Yeah, on one of two polls. My first initial reaction was, well, thank God for IC360 and all these other, companies that do work like this. I mean, it makes it very hard for a sports for an athlete to like act in cahoots because they keep getting caught. Jontay Porter, blah, 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 right? And then that, that's the naive side of me, which was quickly slapped down by you.
Right, pretty much.
when you said, well, shit, maybe this is happening all the time and it's just, every so often it gets caught. And so honestly, I'm not really sure where I land on this. Like, is it happening all the time? And are people, I mean, I suppose if you're really smart about it, you could probably get away with it, right? I don't
Right.
know.
Yeah, it's I'm not sure. I mean, if I had to guess, I would say something like for everyone who gets caught manipulating, there are probably four or five more who are getting away with it, but that is totally a random guess. Maybe it's more like a 1-to-1, or maybe it's more like a 20-to-1. I don't know, but it's about not getting greedy if you can afford to not get greedy, and that seems to be the problem with some of the guys getting caught. Like Jontay Porter, if he has a couple of friends in different states using different sports books to place a single modest bet on an under, two guys do $1,000 or something without making a big parlay out of it, and he just does it once, I'm sure he doesn't get busted. The problem is it worth it for, three guys to split $2,000?
Right.
You kind of there's a point at which you have to be risking a certain amount of money to make it worth your while. It seems like with Michael Beasley, again, all we really know is that he had a lot of big money problems, and so one assumes there were big amounts being bet, and that's why there's an investigation. I bet there are some people being careful, trying to just make a couple grand here and there and getting away with it, especially I'm thinking college athletes who aren't making millions of dollars. If there got to be some little scams going on, and they're getting away with them as long as they keep them small.
Well, any sport, I guess, where the athletes aren't make, I mean, Ortiz and Beasley kind of blows theory out of the water, but any
Right.
sport where there's not a where the you're not making a ton of money, tennis, like if you're a lower level, like if you're not making a ton of money, like the incentive is there to cheat, and if you know you can get away with it. And as you were saying, like, not get greedy. Listen, if I knew that I could make, an extra $500 a week, if my buddy's, gonna, double fault on the fourth time he has service,
Right.
like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Like, I don't have any moral qualms about that, which probably says a lot about me, but
It says at least a little about you,
it
yeah.
says a little about me. But so, right, so given the opportunity to do this, I think I would, and I don't think I would be greedy about it. I think I would take, I would treat it as, like, a side hustle, like jeffedelstein.substack.com.
Right, there you go. Look at you knowing the web address now right off the top of your head. Yeah, that's but said right. So then the trick is like, okay, $500 a week, no one's going to notice a thing. Let's do it. Can you continue to do that, or do you at some point, someone says, "Oh, you know what? I think we could go for 1500 this time." And no, where everyone gets tripped up eventually. Well,
Sure.
everyone that we find out about. I guess that's the thing here again, is the people who really have the discipline to not get greedy can keep getting away with little scams.
I would suppose so, right? I mean, like, how many, like, forget sports betting for a second, but how many, like, criminals are there out there that are smart about it?
Right.
There must be some, right?
Yes.
George
Yeah, and
Clooney
they're
has
the
played like 30 of them in a movie, I think, you
That's
know,
true.
and you and you're and you're very handsome also if you do that.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I'm probably coming down more on your side now. That's probably rampant and always has been, but more so now because there's so many outs, really. Like, it's a whole world, of sports betting out there. I don't know. It's
Right.
probably rampant now, the more I think about it.
Yeah, I mean, again, how rampant is rampant? I'm not sure, but I definitely do feel that there's probably more people getting away with it than getting caught. But just on the micro betting front, I've come around on the side of it, that micro betting is not a big threat to integrity, in part because the limits are so small that
Yeah.
Tomash told me it's usually capped at $200. I do still have my separate concerns that micro betting is bad from an RG perspective. I think we've talked about this. It's a little like hitting spin on the slot machine, at least as close as you can get to that with sports betting. And I'm sure most people who do it are fine and have fun with it. You're betting $10 every few pitches, and so you're up or down $80 at the end of the ball game. You had a good time, whatever. But it can also be very addictive, much, much more addictive than I'm going to put $50 on the Mets and sit back and sweat the
Right.
game.
Have you ever? I've never placed a micro bet in my life.
Not micro betting. I've
I've done
done
some live
plenty of
betting.
in-game,
Yeah.
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 Like and that I that's my most successful play in boxing, is to wait for a fight to start, watch a couple of rounds, and if the underdog is doing well, and I think he has a chance to win. Usually the odds aren't moving, aren't changing fast enough, and he's still a big underdog, and I've had some good success with that. So yeah, that
Okay.
sort of in-game betting, yes, but maybe I guess I've done a tiny bit of like, does this count as, watching a football game result of this drive? It's sort of micro betting ish, but I've definitely never done pitch by pitch or tennis point by tennis point or any of that.
I don't understand how you can do that watching it on TV, knowing that like your feed is slower than the no matter where you are.
Right.
I mean, I understand. If you're at a ball game, I can understand.
Right.
I could see the allure actually if you're right there.
Right.
But to do it from my couch seems just foolhardy.
Yeah, I agree. It's the feed is almost always going to be slow, far enough behind that the pitch you're betting on has already happened by the time you bet on it. If you're just doing it from your couch, I don't
Right.
know,
Yeah,
but
I mean, I'm sure, but I'm sure, it's all on the up and up. But there's no way to know that, I mean, even in my own house, like if somebody's watching something, like in the living room, and I have it on my phone,
right.
it's one of us is going to be like 10, 12 seconds ahead
Yeah,
or behind. I don't even know what's going on.
right. Even on our two separate TVs in different rooms that are on the same YouTube TV feed, we've noticed during like Eagles season where I'm in one room and my son or my wife is in the other, one of us is always reacting to the play 10 seconds before the other. So,
Well, it
yeah.
could happen right now as we're recording this. Like you spilled a cup of coffee 10 minutes from now.
Did I? You saw
I've
that
seen I
happen?
saw it happen, yeah.
I'm not sure that's how this works. All right, a couple of other quick stories to hit. We discussed the California fantasy sports situation at length last week with Dan Bach. And then on Thursday, after we recorded, it became official. Attorney General Rob Bonta released his opinion that yes, all forms of daily fantasy play are prohibited in his view. But the perhaps unexpected twist was Governor Gavin Newsom's office immediately issuing a statement disagreeing with the opinion. Nothing's going to change in the short term. This could take a very long time to play out. It's an opinion, not a law. Jeff, are you feeling like DFS in California is fairly safe for now?
For now, yeah, I think I don't know, obviously the personal back and forth between the AG and Newsom, but you have to assume that by Newsom like stepping in, it has to at least neutralize somewhat like what the AG can do. This is pro I'm hoping, guessing that this will eventually get settled somehow legislatively. Although again, when it comes to California, like it's everything, if you want to flip a coin to see who does the dishes at night, you better check with Victor Rocha if you're allowed to do that. So who knows, right? Who knows, right? But it begins and ends with the tribes. Like, is there a path where the tribes and DFS operators can say, we're cool? Is there a path? What is FanDuel? Your DraftKings seems like they're not moving with their DFS. FanDuel seems a little shakier. The underdogs and the prize picks and all them, they're not going anywhere. So I think for now we're fine. I do, I just cannot stop thinking about the Republican debate from 2016 when
Right.
Chris Crit fantasy football, we're talking about fantasy football.
Right.
Like, I can't believe that we're still talking about
That
this
was that
in
was the
2025.
that was the last time someone injected common sense into a Republican debate was that moment.
I think you might be 100% correct on that score.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Victor Rocha. Did you see his comments yesterday from the
I
New
didn't,
Normal
but
podcast?
I can imagine.
Right. Well, I'll tell you more or less what he said was that by not leaving the state for DFS, DraftKings and FanDuel have betrayed the trust of California's tribes. They've failed a loyalty test. They were, supposed to be working together now with the tribes on sports betting, but if they really wanted to work together with the tribes, they would have shut down DFS in the state based on this AG opinion. So, I mean, it's not a law, it's an opinion. I think it would be a pretty pathetic move if either DFS operator shut down before being told they have to. Yeah, Rocha, a lot of people vouch for him as a good person on a personal level. A lot of people
Right.
like him. His public persona, man, it is rough. I do not,
I love it.
just as,
I
in
mean,
terms of his public persona, I do not care for this guy.
Yeah, I know, but you know me. I'm a big fan of like the loud, brash, in your face. Honestly, I mentioned flipping a coin for the dishes. I'm th next time I get in a fight with my wife, I think I might just loop Vo Rosha in on it and have him
Sure.
like deal with it. You know, he could be my proxy.
You want to him to take your spot in arguments with your wife, basically. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's not bad. He's probably better at that than you
I
are. Yeah.
just roll over, you know, show my belly.
All right. Last story, very quick on this one. The World Series of Poker main event numbers became official on Monday. 9,735 entries, third biggest of all time, but down 3.7% from the previous year. $10 million for first place, same as last year. Everyone in the final nine gets at least $1 million. A strong number for the field, not a record-setting number, almost certainly having something to do with international travelers feeling iffy about the risks of coming to the U.S. under the current regime. Jeff, anything to say about this?
I don't really know. I think it's nice. I'm glad to see that poker is maintaining its spot. You know, like down a little bit from last year. It makes sense.
Right.
I said it was on the podcast. I think poker should become like the national. There should be a poker should become like the national game. Get people back out of the house, meeting people again, face to face, sitting down. Monday night poker in America. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's anyone can play. In theory, it's a level playing field. A lot of luck to balance out everything else. Good social activity. Although I still prefer playing online because I don't have to deal with the social part of it.
That's what I'm after here. Where the world's collapsing around us, and you see these numbers about like kids, like I saw something like in 1990, 85% of teenagers like hung out, with friends at least twice a week. That number's down to like 30%. People don't. It's a national tragedy unfolding before our eyes. I want kids playing poker. Am I allowed to say that? They could play for Reese's
Sure.
Pieces.
Yeah, there you go. As long as there aren't like real significant financial stakes. It's funny, I look, this is a sample size of two children, so I don't think I speak for the nation, but my kids do a lot of actual in-person social interaction.
Same
I
here.
feel like summer camp it has been huge, especially in this post-COVID world, for like
Right.
forcing them to spend a chunk of their year off their phones and making friends in person, and then they hang out with those friends all the time outside of camp. They also still spend a lot of time, sending Snapchat messages to their friends instead of actually talking to them. But
Right.
yeah, I don't know. It's I'm not going to deny that it's a real concern for a lot of people, but yeah, my kids are doing okay.
My kids are doing okay too. It's funny. My son, he's 16, he's working at a day camp. I think I've seen him in since school ended, like total, like just eyes on him 35 minutes in the last 3.5 weeks. He's
Wow.
working at camp, he gets home and he's out, hanging out with his girlfriend, going fishing.
Yeah.
I don't
So
ask a lot of other
the girlfriend,
the girlfriend helps,
that
yeah.
explains why you hardly see him.
Yeah, that well that and yeah, I don't know. He's fishing. A lot of fishing with the boys. I think that might be code for something else, but we'll
Yeah, I don't has he shown you any pictures of him holding a fish?
Okay, well he does, it is funny. He does love fishing. He's a bit of an outdoorsman, unlike his old man here. He refuses to touch the fish. So his friends have to like handle that end of it. But yeah, they do actually catch some fish every now and again. So yeah. Whatever. I should stop
Maybe
talking.
we should start a fishing podcast called Fish on Fish. Right? You see,
that's not that.
gambling,
That's not terrible.
All
Not
right.
terrible.
Right.
Thank
That sounds like an idea for a column at jeffedelstein.substack.com.
you very much.
All right. Let's move along to our guest, shall we?
Yes.
Normally, April is the time of year when a gambling podcast might interview a CPA to offer tax advice, but this year has not been a normal year, and so we're doing it in July with professional gamblers hitting the panic button about what their tax-paying futures look like. And so joining us now is Zach Zimbili, a Las Vegas-based accountant with particular expertise in gambling and sports betting taxes. Zach, welcome to Low Rollers.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So As this conversation moves along, we can get into whether this 90% loss deduction provision will become law or not. But to start in discussing it, I guess let's just assume that it will become law, that in 2026 this cap exists. What is your key advice to any serious gambler, whether they're pros or just avid recreational gamblers who put a lot of money in play? What are the key things to know about how to hold on to as much of their money as possible under this theoretical new system?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is to just be aware of it and factor it into the way that you're doing your gambling, right? So if you have your records from 2024 and 2025, and if you think you're probably going to have similar volume in 2026, just take a look and say, how is this going to impact me? Just do some pro forma calculations. That way, you know, based off of the way that you're gambling, hey, it's going to impact me this much and it may not be worth it, or, you know, I can still potentially take this hit. And I could still be profitable, or if I'm just a recreational gambler, I'm still fine taking that additional tax hit, knowing that like I said, my gross figures are going to be X amount of dollars per year.
So when you use the phrase it may not be worth it, you're saying a gambler can calculate based on their last couple of years that this, if this happens, it could cost them enough money that if you are a professional gambler, you should rethink that because you won't
Right.
be the profit margins won't be there for you.
Yeah, it comes down to a personal profit motive, or not profit motive, but how much time you're putting into it versus how much you're getting out of it. And if you're doing this at a decent margin and it's worth it for you for the time that you're putting into it, then you might just continue to still do it. But if your marginal return is going to be deeply impacted by this, somebody might just say, personally, it's time for me to move on from gambling into something else, or just pursue gambling at a lesser clip and still go ahead and do something in a different field, perhaps.
Now, I know I spoke with you for the story that we're publishing on in-game. Session accounting seems to be like the one thing that you have talked about. I've talked to a few other accountants, and the idea being, session accounting is legal when it comes to like things like slots or poker, and it's been determined there is no IRS determination for what constitutes a session when it comes to sports betting. So, do you think a session is going to be a game? Is it going to be a season? Might some gamblers try to push it all the way and say, my session was started January 1st at midnight, ended 11:59 p.m. on December 31st?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's no actual definition. Obviously, the goal would be to have a session that's as long as possible. I can guarantee you there's people that are pushing it right now before this law even goes into effect, just because whether they don't know what the actual definition of a session is or they want to push it. But my goal over the next 6 months, hopefully before that, would be to try to determine what is going to be acceptable by the IRS. Previously, it wasn't as important what a session was from sports betting perspective, especially for professional gamblers, because all of that information, all the gross wins and losses are going to net out on your Schedule C. But now it's obviously going to be much more important. And if there's nothing that we think can be done and sessions still need to be shown as individual games or, you know, whatever it may be, then that's information I'm obviously going to want to communicate to everybody so they can make their own choice. But if myself and, you know, others in the industry get together and figure out there might be something else that can be done, then we're probably going to try to recommend that. But at the end of the day, it's going to make sure that whatever recommendation is made, it can be defended, and we think it'll be a solid position with what the IRS guidance is so far.
Do you have like a best guess of what a session that what the IRS will accept as a session, or there's just really no way to know?
There's no way to know. This has never really come up from a sports betting perspective. I mean, the couple of court cases that are out there are relatively old in general, and I don't foresee the IRS giving any guidance here. Maybe if this law holds, and the IRS realizes how important it is, they might put out specific guidance. But gambling guidance is very few and far between outside of, you know, specific court cases. So it might take a court case for somebody to try to challenge that and try to get some type of new legislation or just a new guidance. But other than that, it's probably not going to happen.
We've kind of been sounding the alarm in the gambling media. From your perspective, talking to like clients, I guess, is the alarm warranted?
I think in certain situations, for sure. I mean, in high volume cases, there's really not much you can do. I'd want to know ahead of time if I'm going to have to change either the way that I'm structuring my business, if I'm a professional gambler, or if this is the only way that it can be done, high volume low margin and realize that it's probably going to be untenable for those type of people. So really it comes down to what type of gambling that you're doing. Obviously, sports betting is going to be hit the hardest if the session definition is going to be every game, and then trying to figure out if you can pivot into other game types or just realize it's not going to work out.
Are there, I mean, this is like, we're going to very quickly find out that I have no idea what I'm talking about here. Is it, I mean, is there like offshore setting up, corporations? Like, are there like really creative ways like that might end up being a workaround here? Where, I mean, we're very early in like figuring
Yeah,
all this stuff out, but.
might be
Right.
that I'm that's not really what I do a lot of work with, so I'm not
Right.
familiar. There might be somebody that knows those type of things, the nuances more than I do, and if I find that person, I'll recommend them to
Right.
people that I work with, but I don't know of anything. And if something did pop up, usually if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. So for
Right.
US citizens, you're going to be limited in a lot of the things that you can do, regardless of kind of where the income is earned.
That is interesting. I guess that is theoretical. I guess if you're a pro gambler and this is how you earn your living, you might actually like decide to move.
Potentially. I mean, but
Right.
if you move, you still have to renounce your US citizenship,
Right.
because if you're a resident in another country, you could potentially get some type of exclusions for income earned outside the US, but you still need to pay tax in the US.
Listen, if my job paid me $2-3 million a year, let's say, and now the government is telling me no more, I'm renouncing my citizenship.
I mean,
Hasta la vista.
it's definitely possible. I mean, Black Friday, we saw people move out of the country, but they didn't
Yeah.
renounce their citizenship because they could
Right.
still. There was no limitations on the type of income that they could report. This obviously has a much larger impact.
I think there's
Are you
potential for
hinting,
some.
Jeff?
No, I'm not going anywhere. But I'd like. There's potential for some like Iron Sheik Hakpi, memes coming out of this thing. I'm looking forward to that.
I was going to say, are you hinting that when you do leave, it would be to a Spanish-speaking country, hence your hasta la vista, that
See,
you're sort of testing it out.
cinco años of Espanol in Escuela.
So you mixed a
Baño
few
cerveza.
English words in there to get
Si,
through, but
baño
okay. I will ask a question on Jeff's behalf about this session accounting. Let's say someone loves to play DFS and plays it pretty much every day, but takes breaks to spend time with their wife, their family, etc. If they eliminate those breaks and are just constantly playing, then that makes it easier to call it all one big session, right?
I mean, there's a little bit of nuance there, but I would say in general, from kind of what we've seen in horse racing, each individual race, could you say each individual wager on a specific game is a session? I mean, I think that's more than reasonable. More than that, that's kind of where it's questionable, and we don't necessarily know if it could be supported. So if you have multiple contests in the same week of the NFL, they're probably going to be discrete entries because there's a separate rule with the IRS with re-entries into poker tournaments. Even if you're re-entering into the same tournament, they look at that as discrete buy-ins, and all the results are tracked separately. So from a DFS perspective, it would probably follow that as closely. That's kind of the closest guidance that we have.
But again, and to be like very clear, this is only affecting gamblers who itemize their deductions, correct?
Correct. It'll be itemized deductions or professional gamblers, since that's going to be a business expense.
Gotcha. All right. So I don't need to worry about my DFS play, Eric.
Okay.
I'm all good.
All right.
I'm still standard deduction over here.
I was just looking for an excuse for you to tell your wife, sorry, I have to play DFS nonstop around the clock to save money.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's a given.
We're
Okay.
still, I mean, I still get questioned often if DFS even counts as gambling income. So it's still something I address with people when they reach out to kind of let them know the IRS definition of gambling, and that DFS almost certainly falls into that definition.
Right.
Okay. So the sort of the big question over all of this is this going to go into effect? Obviously, none of us know the answer, but we're seeing people fighting against this most prominently with Dina Titus's bill, which now has bipartisan backing, and even the AGA, which supported the federal bill overall, is saying it doesn't like this part of it. I know you're a tax expert more than a political expert, but are you feeling one way or the other about the likelihood of this getting snuffed out between now and January 1st?
I mean, common sense says I hope it is, but when I take a look back at it, this is just a personal stand. There's a lot of things in the bill that I'm sure weren't going to be universally supported. So I'm not sure if this one specific thing is going to have enough momentum to be changed. I obviously hope that it is. While I'm aware of the kind of bigger picture, how things are either changed or overrun, I'm not sure if there's other avenues that they could potentially take. But for now, we're going to plan on it being enacted in 2026, just as a worst case scenario, so we can give everyone as long a runway as possible to kind of make a decision as to what's best for them moving forward.
I have one final question, Zach. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sibling, yes.
Your sibling, are they also a ZZ, or are you just blessed?
I'm the only ZZ. Yep, I think that
Okay.
was partial. I think that was partially from ZZ Top. I think my parents thought that that
Oh.
would be interesting initials. So
That,
I think
but
that's
they
why I
were
went that
right.
way.
They were
Yeah.
right. I'll give them that.
I guess I pretty much every class you were ever in your lifetime, you always had like the back right corner or the back left corner or wherever, depending on
I
where they
was always at
started
the end
from.
of the line,
Always
pretty
last
sure.
in line. Yeah.
It was tough to find somebody behind Zimbile. Yeah, it was
Right.
tough. Yeah.
And so I have one last question for you that's not quite on topic but related to the topic is you live in Vegas. Are you a gambler yourself?
At times, I used to play poker a little bit. Now, not as much. I don't find myself in the area of the strip as much as I used to. So when I first moved out there, it was a little bit closer. So now I'm kind of more the outdoors side of Las Vegas than the indoor side.
Even so, you're a transplant. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from New Jersey, and I moved out to Australia.
Oh, hey, here we go.
He's one of yous, Jeff.
Where
Yeah,
in
so
Jersey?
I grew up in Monmouth County,
All
so
right, yeah, I'm in
right in the
Mercer.
Jersey Shore. Okay,
Yeah,
yeah, and
awesome.
I moved from a state that ends up being kind of the mecca of sports betting to Las Vegas, where everyone always assumes that there's tons of sports betting that's not as quite familiar. And then I let them know that, there's really not much sports betting in Las Vegas or in Nevada in general.
All right. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
you miss, I mean, how long you been out there now?
15 years, about.
15. Yeah, so you're not coming
Yeah.
back home. You're Vegas now.
I think we'll maybe do a split at some point to East Coast and West Coast. Yeah.
It's the pizza. I mean, you can't you, and the rest of the food. You can't give it
Yeah.
up.
Pizzas and
I know.
bagels are really
Oh,
the
come
two
on.
cruxes. That's
It's
all you need.
and God, I'll mail you some. Just give me
Yeah.
your address off the
It's
thing.
not the
I'll
same.
FedEx.
It's not the
Not
same.
it's not. It's not. I agree.
Yeah.
Well,
Jeff, I get the sense Jeff liked you from the start, but he likes you about 75% more now that he knows you're a Jersey guy. It changes
yeah,
everything for him.
I can see
Takes one or
that.
no one. Takes one or no one.
Ex exactly.
Well, this has been great. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Zach. Everyone listening, you can go to his website, Zach, that's Zak, ZachTheCPA.com. He's also at ZachTheCPA on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast and trying to clear some of this up for us, Zach.
Yeah, you got it.
Our thanks again to Zach, the official accountant of Low Rollers. I think we can call him that, right?
1,000%.
All right. So it's been a few weeks since I've made my final segment on the show, a personal gambling story. I just haven't had any good ones during these summer sports doldrums, and I still don't this week, but I have been gambling vicariously this week. I'm going to plug another podcast here. The Poker Go podcast has been a daily must listen for me throughout the World Series of Poker. 7 days a week, they record late at night in Vegas, it posts in the morning on the East Coast. I get caught up on everything I've missed, and it's fun in part because of the bantering and bickering between the two hosts, Donnie Peters, a former coworker of ours under the Big Better Collective umbrella, and a guest at least once or twice on Gamble On, and Tim Duckworth, who I don't really know personally, but I feel like I know him after listening to his podcast every day for the last 6 weeks or so. Anyway, Donnie and Tim both played in the main event. And they both cashed in the main event. And it's been really fun to sweat along with them, to check their Twitter feeds before I go to bed to see if there are updates. Tim unfortunately got bounced yesterday. He finished 1,006th to turn his $10,000 entry into $20,000, minus whatever taxes he has to pay on the winnings. And Donnie's still alive on day five. As we record this, he bagged 835,000 chips, a little below the average stack, with 500 some players remaining. He's guaranteed at least a $32,500 payout. So good luck today and hopefully tomorrow and the next day to Donnie. I don't have any good gambling stories this week, but Donnie and Tim sure do. So congrats to them. And by the way, Tim, if you're listening, no shame in just calling on the river with the pocket nines that made a full house. It was a slightly suboptimal play, perhaps, but not the unforgivable sin that Donnie made it out to be. I'm on your side here, Tim.
Well, as longtime listeners of this podcast know, this segment usually has me exasperated about something in the gambling space. But currently, there's nothing that exasperates me. Yeah, fantasy sports in California under attack some 15 years after it debuts? Unexasperated. Poly market not calling a suit? I'm not exasperated. New Jersey basically banning people from talking about their bets? Look at me, Ma. I ain't exasperated. Luis Ortiz pitching 25-foot sliders? I am and remain without exasperation. The federal government putting pro gamblers out of business? Exasperation, I know not thee. Chip dumping, Malik Beasley, Cauchy saying betting is not betting? Not exasperated, not exasperated, exasperation non grata. I am free of exasperation. Yep, nothing to see here. Nothing to see. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go flush my head down the nearest toilet. Until next week, we are low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.